didn't respond.
Tell me.
Caleb closed his eyes as images filled his mind, passing from Walt's Koran to Ishek over the collective. Dark places. Dark vices. Consensual torture. Enough, Caleb said, pushing the memories out of his head. He stared at Walt. You're a danger to this mission. No more than you. I can resist Nyarlath. Can you say the same?
Yes.
You couldn't resist me.
I've realized that this planet is the end. Not only for humankind, but for anything that comes here and thinks to control it. That is its place in the universe. The end of all things. The Old One may have seen the spread of the Relia across the universe, but it will not come to pass. I'm convinced of that. If it doesn't matter which master we serve, then it's better to serve the master who makes no demands, who asks for loyalty and earns it.
Until you have no choice.
It's been months. I felt no compulsion.
Nyarlath is coming.
Walt shuddered again.
Who told you this?
Multiple Koran loyal to her. She's had agents here for some time, and when she arrives, if she aims to compel you, then you will comply.
I'll resist,
and you'll fail like you failed with me.
I'll resist long enough to kill myself, or for you to kill me.
Caleb leaned back in his seat. He wasn't sure she would or could. At the same time, he was hesitant to remove her. They needed all the help they could get, even if it was from another Relia.
You'll remain open to me, Caleb said. No resistance.
Yes, Colonel.
When Nyarlath comes, if you or your Koran are not strong enough to defy her, I will end your life. Do you understand?
Yes, Colonel.
Caleb stood up.
Take a minute to compose yourself and then meet us back up front. We've got 20 minutes until we drop.
Yes, Colonel.
Caleb left the room, heading next door to the bridge. He didn't have security clearance, so he knocked on the door. It slid open a moment later, and he entered.
General, he said.
Well? Stacker asked.
It's an asset worth utilizing. At least until it isn't.
He nodded.
Carry on.
Caleb ducked back off the bridge, returning to the front of the dropship. Sergeant Walt rejoined him a minute later, avoiding eye contact.
That went well.
Keeping her was risky, but it was a risk they had to take. If nothing else, she might serve as an early warning against Nyarlath's arrival. And against Nyarlath, every second would count. 46. Caleb. Caleb moved to the front of the Liberators as Stacker descended the steps into the cargo hold.
Liberators! Attention!
Caleb snapped. The rest of the unit moved into place behind him, and they all came to attention as Stacker reached the group.
We're almost in position, Stacker said. Grab your gear. We drop in 5.
Yes, sir!
They barked back, immediately going into motion. Most of the Liberators had already finished organizing. They were dressed in full combat armor, plasma rifles strapped to their backs and helmets resting nearby. Caleb was nearly ready, too. He had left the skin behind, stashed into a small compartment near the reactor for safekeeping. He wore the combat armor Stacker had brought him instead, comfortable in its familiarity. He had snapped on the helmet and connected to the unit's subnetwork a few minutes later, the action momentarily bringing him back over 200 years to his former life as a space marine. For a moment, he wasn't in the dropship with these new squadmates. He was prepping for action with his vultures. Sho, Washington, Banks, Habib. They were all gone now. Except for Washington. And he was hundreds of light years away.
What kind of ordnance are we looking to recover, General?
Caleb asked, following Stacker over to the side of the cargo hold and the robotic arms that held his powered armor.
We've got all kinds of munitions, Stacker replied. But I'm most interested in the Scuzz rockets and the enhanced plasma rifles.
Enhanced plasma?
About 10 times the heat density and charge of the P-90 on your back, Stacker said. They use mineral components mined from the asteroids outside Proxima to manage the heat load without exploding in your face. The plasma cannons on board use an older version of the tech.
He stepped back into the center of the arms, which immediately went to work placing the powered armor over him.
What about the rockets?
Essentially mini-nukes. One warhead separates into 100 delivery vehicles, similar to the cluster bombs we used earlier, only about 100 times more powerful. They were designed as anti-spacecraft weapons, in the event the enemy utilizes swarm tactics or high volumes of air or spaceborne targets. Considering the trife, that idea isn't too far-fetched.
He paused while the arms dropped the large helmet over him, screwing it to the rest of the armor. The front visor slid open.
We never wanted to use them here, but we kept some of them because we knew we might not always have an option. If what you say about these Jaxcluth is true, we're probably going to need them.
Roger that, General, Caleb said.
We have other weapons inside, nearly 50 years' worth of munitions we've held back from Proxima. Enough to put up a good fight.
Enough to win?
Not on our own. That's part of the problem. Whatever Proxima thinks about Earth and the people who live on it, none of us are going to make it through this without working together. And even then, the odds are bad. There's no point trying to pretend they aren't.
Agreed. They were bad the last time I was here, too. We aren't extinct yet, and both the Hunger and the Axon do have weaknesses. It's up to us to exploit them.
I like the way you think, Caleb.
The arms finished assembling the armor. Stacker stepped forward out of the machine, turning back to grab his large rifle from its mount on the bulkhead. He snapped it to his back, keeping the visor up as he crossed the hold to the rear ramp.
Liberators, he snapped. Line up!
Caleb grabbed his helmet and joined Stacker at the head of the line, while the other Liberators filled in behind them, two by two.
Are we going in hot, General? Caleb asked.
Lukewarm, Stacker replied. No positive identification of any obvious threats, but all things considered, I'm assuming the worst.
Yes, sir.
Buckets on. Sound off.
Caleb dropped his helmet over his head, hearing it click into place, connecting to the rest of the combat armor. The HUD activated in front of him, and he waited until his connection turned green before speaking.
Liberator 1, check.
Sergeant Walt was next.
Liberator 2, check.
Liberator 3, check,
Corporal Hotch said, a nervous quiver in his voice.
Liberator 4, check,
Corporal Dane said, his voice like gravel.
Liberator 5, check,
Private Yasko snapped, her response sharp and eager.
Liberator 6, check,
Private Kai replied, his soft inflection more like a meditation.
Liberator Prime, Stacker said, check.
Parabellum, Pyro said, check. We're closing on the target. Skids down in 30 seconds. Still no sign of alien activity, trife or otherwise. General, there's a small group of nomads camped about 2 clicks from the main. We're going to draw their attention.
How many?
20 or so, and their horses.
6, 5, you've got guard duty, Stacker said. They get too close, scare them off.
Yes, sir, they replied.
20 seconds, Pyro said, counting down. 15 seconds.
Stacker hit the control pad for the ramp. It clunked and began to drop, letting the air start rushing in.
10 seconds.
Wedge formation, Stacker said. I've got point. Nice and easy.
The ramp continued to drop. Caleb could feel the sharp downward motion of the craft, controlled enough to keep them on their feet. He could see the landscape approaching through the newly opened space.
Is that...
His heart started to race. Old memories flooding back.
It is, isn't it?
5 seconds,
Pyro announced.
Ishek was right.
General, Caleb said, I know this place. This is where the Deliverance was built. This was home.
47. Caleb. The skids hit the ground, absorbing the impact as Nathan charged down the ramp. He didn't reply to Caleb's comment, remaining focused on the mission. Caleb pulled himself back to the moment, only a step behind as they evacuated the dropship, the Liberators running off behind him. He quickly scanned the terrain, confident they had touched down at the launch site of the Deliverance, half a click from the excavated hill where the massive Generation starship had been assembled. The hangar was destroyed during the launch, and the evidence of the side of the incline's collapse was evident beneath the regrown vegetation. but so was evidence of a newer, smaller excavation. A break in the landscape revealing dirt and rock that had been moved back and forth. There were crush patterns in the grass as well, suggesting a dropship landed here regularly. Taking the lead, Nathan raced toward the disturbed. Liberators 5 and 6 stayed further back, tailing them at a slower pace and keeping themselves oriented toward the nomads Pyro had pointed out, a red arrow marking them on the HUD.
"Looks like our nomads are more curious than afraid," Pyro said, monitoring them on the dropship's more powerful sensors. "They're headed our way."
"Liberators 5 and 6, you know what to do," Caleb said. "Roger, Liberator 1.
The rest of the unit followed Nathan to the side of the hill. He came to a stop beside a large rock, kneeling in front of it and digging at the ground with his armored hand. He pulled up the earth, revealing a control pad beneath it a moment later. He tapped in the access code, and the vegetation to his right faded away, revealing a blast door behind it. Caleb smirked beneath his helmet. A projection and a fake potential door.
"Clever."
Nathan approached the door, reaching for the control pad mounted on the right side. His hand paused before he touched it.
"Something's wrong," he said.
Caleb instinctively grabbed his rifle from his back in response to the statement.
"General?"
Nathan's hand continued to hover over the control pad. The seconds passed like hours.
"General?"
Caleb repeated. He checked his HUD. The nomads were near enough, his ATCS painted them each individually, closing quickly on Yasko and Kai. The two liberators started firing, a few warning shots that hit the ground ahead of their horses.
"Something's wrong,"
Ishek echoed Nathan's statement. Caleb was inclined to agree. The warning shots hadn't slowed down the nomads at all. The two liberators stopped shooting. They were still as the 20 horseback riders thundered toward them. What the hell was going on? Yasko and Kai turned to face one another, raising their rifles slightly.
"Axon," Caleb said, recognizing the action right before the two liberators discharged their weapons into one another.
Both of them fell at the same time, just as the riders reached them.
"Retreat!"
Caleb started firing, launching bolt after bolt into the riders. He cursed as the round passed right through what were obviously holograms.
"General, we have to get out of here," Caleb said. "Parabellum, we need immediate evac."
The dropship whined behind them, the thrusters powering up. Nathan turned back toward the control pad, his fingers moving to open the sealed door.
"No," Caleb said, lunging forward and grabbing Nathan's hand. "Whatever you see, it isn't real. Come on, General."
Nathan whirled on him, slamming his chest with his free hand and sending him sprawling onto his back. The liberators closed on him, pointing their guns at his chest, except for Walt. She shot forward, hitting Hotch hard enough to knock him into Dane and sending them both to the ground before they could shoot Caleb. Then she latched onto Nathan's hand, trying to keep him from opening the door.
"They were waiting for you," she said. "General, it's a trap."
Nathan grabbed her by the neck, lifting her and throwing her aside before turning back.
"Ishek!"
Caleb shouted. The advocate emitted a high-pitched squeal, the frequency enough to momentarily interrupt the Axon's neural disruption.
"General, the others," Caleb said,
hoping the alternate name would help Stacker resist the hallucinations. Stacker's head turned. The dropship was swooping toward them, spinning to point the open ramp in their direction. The nomads were closing from the left flank, the first rider breaking free from the group. His rifle came to his hands in an instant. He started shooting, targeting the first rider, his rounds punching through it without effect. The dropship landed a dozen meters away.
"Go,"
Stacker shouted.
"Retreat!"
Caleb grabbed Hotch's arm, helping him up. Walt did the same for Dane. The lead nomad raised an old single-shot bolt-action rifle toward them and fired. Dane grunted, his head slumping forward in response. The other nomads grabbed similar guns from the side of their saddles, preparing to fire on the liberators. Some of the liberators slowed, hesitating as they brought up their rifles to shoot back.
"No!"
Caleb let go of Hotch, letting him run on his own. He swept his rifle across the line of nomads, looking for the intellect that was running this show. He had one shot at picking the right rider. The real one.
His eyes crossed the back of the line. No matter which one he shot at, he was only guessing. He never got to take the shot. Stacker's rifle cracked beside him, roaring as it unleashed a sudden, massive barrage across the entire row of riders. The rounds went through most of them, except one. Blue flashes erupted from the Axon shield, the sudden activation causing the holographic projections to fade, revealing the featureless black humanoid mounted on a gray horse. It jumped from the saddle and gained speed, sprinting toward them faster than a horse could run. Its intent was obvious. Beat them to the ship. Caleb joined Stacker in firing at the intellect, hitting it hard with both plasma and projectiles. Walt made the ramp carrying Dane in her arms, with Hotch right behind.
"Pyro, get us out of here,"
Stacker bellowed through the comm. The dropship's lift thrusters fired full bore on both sides, pummeling Caleb and Stacker with swirling dirt and debris. The craft began to rise before either of them reached it, rising above their heads within seconds. Stacker wrapped a powerful arm around Caleb's waist and jumped, firing his assist thrusters and arcing up into the hold, the heavy landing shaking the dropship. He released Caleb, reaching for the ramp controls. A sharp blue bolt of energy nearly severed his hand, entering the dropship and slamming into the top of the hold, powering through it and burning into the next deck. "Hold on," Pyro cried, banking hard to the left. The momentum tossed all of them into the bulkhead and then threw them back as the dropship accelerated and climbed. The ramp slammed closed, the craft continuing to rise. Caleb pulled himself to his feet, checking his HUD. Dane's tag was red.
"Son of a bitch," Stacker cursed, getting up off the deck. "We need to go back around and hit it from the air."
"You'll never see it from the air," Caleb replied. "Not unless it wants to be seen."
Stacker growled, storming over to Dane's body and looking down. The Liberator had died as if he'd been shot, but there was no bullet, no wound. The intellect had convinced his mind of the shot.
"I've never seen one duplicate its projections before," Stacker said, "or combine the hologram with the hallucination."
"They're learning to fight us more efficiently," Caleb replied. "Now that some of us know how to fight back against them."
"Makes sense."
"It knew about the weapons cache," Caleb said. "It was waiting for you to open it."
"It attacked us before I could."
"It attacked us before we could get to the guns inside. You have something in there it doesn't want us to recover. Something that can hurt it and others like it."
"Or it wants a piece of the action," Stacker countered. "Either way, how the hell could it know what we have in the cache, never mind where the cache is?"
"How many people knew this place was here?" Caleb asked.
"Hardly anyone who's still alive. Me and Pyro are the last two."
"What about someone who isn't still alive?"
"Dead men tell no tales, Caleb."
"Except when they're telling them to an Axon intellect. Don't underestimate them, General."
Stacker stared at him. Caleb could tell the General was trying to guess where the Axon might have learned about the cache. Nathan was worried he had slipped up somewhere, let his guard down. And maybe he had. There was no telling where the Axon had come from or how long it might have been waiting for Nathan to arrive. It didn't matter anyway. It was there, and it had kept them from getting to the weapons cache. But why hadn't it entered on its own? Even if it couldn't duplicate Stacker's biometric identification, it should have been able to force the door open.
"I know what you're thinking," Nathan said. "Tinker made the lock. Electromagnetic with a series of 8 failsafes. Even intellects have limits when it comes to pure force." "He really did know what you were thinking."
"Forget the guns for now," Nathan continued. "We will have to warn the sheriff that a storm is coming, and the only way we'll survive it is together. Walt, find somewhere to stow Dane's body. Liberators, check your gear and stay ready. As far as I'm concerned, nowhere is safe anymore."
48. Hayden.
"I feel like we were just doing this a few hours ago," Hicks said as Hayden emerged from the armory.
He had traded the full combat armor from his last mission for a bodysuit beneath his clothes, and his helmet for his custom-made sunglasses,
leaving behind the star-shaped comm and the plastic star that revealed his identity. It was possible he might need to do some questioning or enter a populated area without raising too much suspicion, and appearing as anything more than a solitary wanderer would make that especially tricky.
"We were just doing this a few hours ago,"
Hayden replied, hopping into the helicopter. The rest of the Rangers were buckled in behind Hicks, and they waved to Hayden as he entered.
"Let's hope we can avoid anything too crazy this time."
"Pause that," Hicks said.
Hayden tapped the side of the glasses to activate the comm.
"Remember, we need to take the perp alive. If he's got a Koron in him, he's going to be stronger and faster than an ordinary human."
He leaned forward and tapped on Bronson's shoulder.
"Let's go."
The pilot gave him a thumbs up and then increased the throttle on the chopper, lifting them into the air. They continued to ascend into the darkness over the tops of the nearby buildings before vectoring northeast, up and over the bay.
"Tell me more about the situation," Hayden said.
"The farmer's name is Josias Colombo," Hicks said. "His wife's name is Rosa. She's 32 years old, slim, big chest."
He paused.
"His words, not mine. Long dark hair, brown eyes. She was wearing a long sleeve shirt, brown cotton pants, and a straw hat. He was surprised he didn't find the hat. Went missing 2 days ago. It took him that long to get down here on horseback."
"What happened to the water taxi?"
"He didn't want to leave his horse."
"His wife is missing and he didn't want to leave his horse?"
Hicks smiled and shrugged.
"What else?" "There's a small settlement about 10 clicks from his farm. It used to be a winery or something, but now the farmers all go there to drink and trade with scavengers passing through. He was worried she was trafficked through there and already passed back east out of the UWT.
"Towards Salt Lake City?" Hayden asked.
"We've got eyes out that way. Further north. It seems word has spread that Ports is clear, and Seattle is thinned out.
There are still nests in Seattle.
Smaller ones. You know the criminals would rather take their chances with Trife than get too close to us. Let's add Seattle to our to-do list."
"I think we're out of space on the to-do list."
Hayden smiled. They were perpetually out of resources for everything he wanted to accomplish. One thing at a time. The helicopter continued northeast, crossing the water and continuing into more open space.
"Is that Alpha?"
Jackson asked, pointing out into the distance. Hayden looked out that way, finding the silhouette of the Goliath in the distance. Only the upper half of the giant was visible past the hills.
"Too small to be Alpha," Hayden said, referring to the largest of the creatures. "And traveling alone."
He continued staring at the silhouette.
"It is a little closer to the city than I would expect. There aren't any Trife within at least 50 clicks of here."
"I've seen them this close before," Bronson said.
"Usually when their bellies are full. He'll probably grab some shut-eye against that hill."
The chopper continued north, leaving the Goliath behind.
"Is that it?"
Hayden asked 20 minutes later, pointing to a long stone building in the distance. Large torches were arranged along the outside, while light from LEDs was visible glowing from within. A handful of horses and a group of customized armored cars sat in a circular driveway around a large, crumbling fountain.
"Looks like it to me," Hicks confirmed. "But since when do farmers have mod boxes like that?"
"Is that a bus?"
Bach asked, pointing to a dark area away from the building.
"Confirmed,"
Hayden said, noticing the vehicle. Like the cars, it was modified with armored plating and steel spines to help protect it from Trife attack.
"I don't like this, Sheriff," Hicks said. "That doesn't look like a farmer's market to me."
"Me neither," Hayden agreed.
The setup was suspicious, to say the least.
"Maybe there's something to Josias's fears about his wife being trafficked. Bronson, bring us in over there. Not too far, not too close."
"Roger, Sheriff,"
Bronson replied. The helicopter began to descend, coming to rest in the field beside the building a few minutes later.
"Wait for my signal."
"Roger, Sheriff,"
Hicks said.
"We got your back."
Hayden jumped out of the chopper and ran across the field toward the building. There were no guards stationed outside, and nobody had come out to see them land, even though the helicopter was anything but quiet. He understood why as he got closer. Loud, live music was blaring out through the windows, a deep rumbling bass escaping into the night. He could drop a bomb on the place and they probably wouldn't hear it. What the hell was happening inside? Hayden made it to the side of the building, crouching low and pressing himself against the wall. He laughed at himself, straightening up a moment later. There was no reason to act like he didn't belong there. He walked right past the open windows, the smell of tobacco, alcohol, and cheap perfume wafting out with the pulsing noise. They had landed at the back of the building, and the closest door was around the side. Hayden reached it and tried the handle. It was unlocked. He slipped inside, nearly bumping into a woman in a short, straight dress carrying a tray of drinks. She gasped and backed up, one of the glasses tipping over and crashing on the floor. The music was deafening, but somehow a bearded thug nearby heard the glass break and was on them in a second.
"What the hell did you do?" he screamed at the woman.
"It was my fault," Hayden said, getting in front of him. "I bumped into her."
"Is that right?" the man said.
"That's right."
Hayden met the heavy's eyes, challenging him.
"You don't look familiar," the man said.
"This is my first time here," Hayden replied, breaking eye contact to look around the room.
Wine barrels had been converted into tables, and men were standing around most of them, barely dressed women at one side or in some cases both. They were playing cards. Gambling. The man smiled.
"You got notes?"
"I got UWT chits," Hayden replied. "Are those good here?"
The man's smile increased.
"Hell yeah. Who told you about the wheat?"
"Josias. You know him?"
"The farmer?"
"That's right.
The little shit was supposed to be here tonight dealing cards. Do you know where he is?"
"Nope."
"Love the sunglasses, by the way," the man said.
He held out his hand.
"Name's Albert. Sorry we got off on the wrong foot. Any cowboy with chits and notes is welcome here, as long as they like good booze, loud music, and expensive women."
He laughed.
"The girls are for sale?" Hayden asked.
"Rent,"
Albert replied.
"We bust them in from up north. They belong to Hansen."
"Never heard of him."
"You've never heard of Hansen? Where are you from, cowboy?"
"All over."
"Scavvy?"
"Just a loner."
"You want a drink?"
Albert asked, reaching for one from the woman's tray. She hadn't moved since the glass had broken, but two other women had come over to pick up the glass.
"No thanks," Hayden said.
The music was making his head hurt, and the smoke was beginning to clog his lungs. The drinking wasn't illegal. Neither was the gambling or the music, though he was starting to question if it should be. The women? Albert said the women belonged to Hansen. That made them slaves, part of the trafficking Josias had mentioned. Even if there wasn't a Koran involved with this, it needed to be put to an end.
"I'm not much for the music," Hayden said. "Do you have somewhere a little more quiet to spend some time with one of your girls? Or maybe two or three?"
He offered his most lascivious smile. Albert smiled back, putting his arm over his shoulder.
"I like the way you think, my friend. What's your name again?"
"Earl,"
Hayden replied.
"Earl, that's a good old cowboy name, isn't it? I like it. Show me the money and I'll show you the goods."
Hayden spread his duster to reach under it, the move flashing the handles of his revolvers. He noticed Albert noticing them, but the man didn't say a word. Not until he produced an entire roll of UWT chits. Albert's eyes lit up at the sight of them.
"Where did you get so many chits?"
Hayden widened his smile.
"I do the dirty work because it pays well."
Albert laughed again.
"You need to meet Bryant. Follow me."
Hayden trailed Albert as the man led him through the first room and into the next. The music was originating from there. Four huge speakers connected to amps, which were connected to the band's instruments and a laptop. Cages flanked the group, women dancing inside them. They were putting on a show, but Hayden could see the fear in their eyes and the tension in their faces.
A dozen men were watching the show, dancing with more girls intermingled among them. The bus probably seated at least 60, and it seemed to have arrived full.
"How long has the wheat been in operation?" Hayden asked as they crossed the room, shouting into Albert's ear.
"About 6 months. You can thank Sheriff Duke for clearing out the trife. He made this all possible."
49. Hayden. Hayden froze in place, heart thumping. He had made this possible? He had cleaned up the trife so people could break free of the cycle of violence and mistreatment that had caused Proxima to label them savages. He had done it with the belief that people were fundamentally good and they wanted to help one another more than they wanted to harm one another. In one instant, Albert had shaken that belief to the core. This place existed because he had taken away the greater threat. He had allowed human evil to replace alien nature without providing enough oversight to ensure it couldn't happen. He had put his faith in goodness without paying enough attention to the downside. His eyes shifted to the women in the cages. Maybe if he hadn't cleared out the trife, they would still be prisoners. Perhaps they would be dead. There was no way to know what the alternate future might be. But this was the present reality, and it was his responsibility to fix it. How many other places like this existed across the UWT? How many other laws broken or ignored? Why weren't more people reporting this? Josias had only come to them because his wife was gone, not because he wanted to put a stop to this abuse. Hell, the farmer had been working here.
"Earl, you okay?" Albert asked, noticing he had stopped. "It's cool if you want to listen to the music."
Hayden forced his face to relax. He looked at Albert.
"Are they available?" he asked, pointing to the women in the cages.
"Which one?"
"All of them."
Albert smiled.
"We can take a break. It'll cost. I can pay. Consider it done. Wait here."
Albert walked over to another thug near the stage. This one was carrying an MK-10 USSF assault rifle and wearing a military bodysuit like Hayden's. He glanced over and then moved to the first cage.
"They'll meet you downstairs," Albert said. "This way."
He led Hayden out of that room and into a third. A few men were on couches, snuggling with a few of the women. Syringes were spread across the table between them, some used, some fresh. They eyed Hayden as he passed before returning to their activities.
"I've seen other places like this outside the UWT, Hayden said as they approached a set of open wooden doors leading to a stairway. "I didn't think there were any here." "This may be the biggest one to the north," Albert replied. "Hansen keeps a tight grip on things, if you know what I mean. But there are smaller operations across the whole region. He who has the most guns wins."
Albert laughed again. Hayden smiled along. They descended a set of stone steps into the cellar. Old wine barrels filled a portion of it, possibly still full, though it had likely all turned to vinegar by now. He paused and looked back as the four women from the cages filed in behind him, and then the two doors swung closed, helping to block out the noise.
"All for me?" Hayden asked. "You've got the chits," Albert said. "I've got a lot more in my other pockets," Hayden smirked. "Maybe I shouldn't have told you that. We're businessmen, Earl, not common thugs."
Hayden nodded. Could have fooled him.
"Ladies," Albert said to the women coming down the steps. "This is Earl. Earl, this is the ladies."
"A pleasure," Hayden said. His gut wrenched when he looked at them, frightened but resigned.
"Albert, who have you brought?"
Hayden turned around again. A new man had joined them, well-dressed, well-groomed, with dark hair and a trimmed goatee. Thin, athletic. Arrogant. Blue eyes, fair skin.
"Bryant, this is Earl. Earl, Bryant. He's a first-timer with a lot of chits to spend."
"My favorite type of clientele,"
Bryant said, flashing a gold-filled smile.
"I see you already made a selection.
What's your pleasure, Earl?
Pain, Hayden replied. Fear. He hated to say it, knowing how the women behind him would react. He understood how things went out there. All of them had probably been raised under the thumb of a tyrant or collected off the streets as kids. Probably long before he had come into the picture and deposed King, the former warlord from Sanisco. Bryant's smile increased.
I see. Well, we can accommodate any taste, so long as the chits are good. In fact, you're welcome to join my private party if you're interested. You can bring those girls with you.
Sure, Hayden replied.
Why not?
Hayden followed Albert and Bryant away from the stairs, past the wine barrels, to a closed door in the corner.
You aren't squeamish, are you, Earl? Bryant asked.
Hayden reached up, grabbing his sunglasses and tapping on the temple six times, signaling the rangers that it was time to move in.
The onboard ATCS had already fed the scene out to their helmets, providing them a full schematic of the building and a look at the positions of the operators inside. Now it was up to Hicks and his team to take out the bad without harming the good. He held the glasses in his hand, making direct eye contact with Bryant. Either the man was infected by a Koran, or he was the most disgusting masochist Hayden had ever encountered. Either way, he was going to take him out.
I'm used to pain, Hayden replied, slipping the sunglasses back onto his face.
He squinted his right eye a few times, activating Hicks's feed in the top right corner. The rangers were running toward the building at full speed.
I doubt you've seen anything like this before.
Bryant pushed open the door. Hayden looked through, his breath caught in his throat. He expected to see men and women with whips and chains tied up and possibly beaten. If he went to an extreme, he expected knives and blood, cutting and choking. This was worse. Much worse. The room was full of creatures that looked like someone had merged a human with a trife. Taller and more muscular than a standard demon, a nearly human head with a mouth full of sharp teeth and five fingers and toes sporting thick claws. They waited patiently, staring back at Hayden, their mouths spreading into smiles.
"Have you ever seen a Reaper before, Sheriff Duke?"
Bryant asked. 50. Hayden. Hayden started reaching for his revolvers. The women behind him screamed. Bryant backed away from the door to give the Reapers room to maneuver. Albert tried to grab Hayden's arm.
You should have taken the offer you were given, Sheriff, Bryant said. The Master is gracious to those who are worthy, and terrible to those who deny them.
The Reapers started toward him, baring their teeth and howling. Hayden was already in motion. He slammed his hand into Albert's face, breaking his nose and sending him sprawling backward. Then he backpedaled, grabbing his guns and turning them on Bryant. The first Reaper was on him before he could shoot the infected man, and he changed targets, quickly pounding the Relia creature with slugs from both guns. He emptied the revolvers into it. It barely reacted. Hayden brought up his forearm, activating the Axon shield and catching its attempt to slash his face. Claws scraped against the energy shield, the force of the blow pulling Hayden's arm down. A slash from the other side nearly decapitated him as he barely got under it in time.
Hicks, a little help,
Hayden shouted, throwing himself backward. The women were screaming and fleeing behind him, trying to get away.
I love the fear, Bryant said. Don't you, Sheriff?
Hayden skidded sideways, ducking between a stack of wine barrels and narrowly avoiding another slash from the Reaper. Its claws went clean through the barrel, sending old, spoiled wine gushing from the wound and onto the floor. Controlled gunfire sounded on the floor above, followed by sharper screams. Hayden glanced at Hicks's feed. The rangers were inside, hitting the targets he had identified earlier. He watched them drop under the quick ambush, shot before they could react. He looked away, backing down the column of barrels and quickly reloading while the Reaper recalibrated, slowing to follow. He aimed a second time. It had caught a dozen rounds in its chest, but he didn't see any of the wounds now. Only small stains of blood from the original damage.
He had seen quick healing before, but he couldn't believe how fast the creature recovered. He was about to squeeze the trigger when something hit the top of the barrels above. He looked up in time to see another Reaper there, looking back down, wearing a monstrous smile. The distraction was intentional. He returned his attention to the Reaper in front of him, getting his arm up again to block its attack, but falling back under the weight of the assault and slipping on the wine that had already spilled. He landed on his back, the Reaper looming over him, a sadistic grin spread across its hideous face. He closed his hand, switching the axon material from defensive to offensive. Claws sprouted over his wrist, and he slashed at the claws reaching for his face, severing the limb from the Reaper. It howled and backed away, giving him a moment to recover. But only a moment. Another Reaper came in from behind just as Hayden got to his feet. He spun on his heel, firing his revolver in its face, the rounds puncturing its eyes and breaking some of its teeth. It fell back, and he snuck past it, heading down the aisle along the wall. Another Reaper chasing behind him. He looked into the hut again. The targets the Rangers had dropped were back on their feet, proving Bryant wasn't the only infected. It was a trap. A carefully laid, perfectly timed trap. Maybe he should have been suspicious when Josias turned up so soon after he arrived back in Sanisco. Maybe he should have guessed something was wrong when he had gotten into the place so easily and brought downstairs so quickly. But that wasn't the way things worked out here. The threats were ever present, but they were never so organized.
"Hicks, it's a trap," he snapped into the comm. "We need to fall back."
"Roger, Sheriff," Hicks replied. "I'll keep the exit clear for you."
"Forget about me," Hayden said. "Get the Rangers out of here."
Hayden froze as a Reaper came around the corner in front of him. Another blocked his rear. He turned right, heading down another aisle, but a third Reaper moved into his path. He was boxed in. They didn't attack. They stood at the edges of his escape routes.
"Now what?" Hayden said out loud.
He held his revolvers at his sides, keeping an eye on the Reapers flanking him, waiting for them to make the first move. He glanced at his HUD again. The fighting had cleared the non-combatants from the building, leaving the women scurrying into the open fields around the structure and the men taking to their horses and cars to escape. They had come for the vices, not the violence. A momentary calm settled over the place. A reset. The music had died out. The silence was thick enough to stop a trife claw. A bead of sweat ran down the side of Hayden's face, cool and heavy. The chaos resumed all at once. Gunfire sounded above again as the three Reapers rushed Hayden. He aimed and fired both revolvers in both directions, using the glasses to assist. The ATCS had a direct connection to his augments, and it helped him line up the shots, placing them perfectly into two pairs of beady black eyes. Blinded, the Reapers on his flanks slowed their attack, waiting to heal. The Reaper in front of him left its feet, lunging at him from 5 meters away and leading with its claws. Hayden dropped a revolver, grabbing the base of the stack of wine barrels to his right and using the strength of his augment to yank it loose. Half a dozen barrels lost their stability, tumbling sideways and hitting the Reaper, knocking it away. Hayden scooped up the revolver, turning back toward the wall. The blinded creatures had yet to recover, and he charged the one on his right, shoving his axon claws up under its chin and through its mouth to its brain. It slumped against the claws, and he roughly pulled them out, letting the Relia collapse and climbing over it while reloading his guns. He had barely cleared the creature when gunshots sounded behind him, and three slugs smashed into his back. The force threw him forward, sending him sprawling onto his stomach. He immediately rolled over, finding Albert about to start shooting. He got a hand up in front of his face, protecting it as the bullets continued to rain in, each shot into the bodysuit like a solid piston pounding into him. He aimed with his other hand, guessing the position of Albert's head, and pulled the trigger. The shooting stopped. Hayden jumped to his feet. Albert was down, but wouldn't stay that way for long. He had killed one Reaper, but there were at least four more. And then there was Bryant. Where had the Koron-infected asshole gone?
"Hicks, sit rep," he snapped, finding Hicks's feed.
The Rangers hadn't retreated the way he had ordered.
"Closing on the stairs," Hicks said. "We're on our way, Sheriff."
"I told you to retreat, damn it."
"That's a negative, Sheriff.
A thunk sounded through the comm, a small silver ball launching from the bottom of Hicks's MK-12. Hayden didn't need to see it to recognize the sound of the powerful rifle. 2 seconds later, the stairwell door exploded. Hayden watched three Reapers dash past the column of wine barrels where he was standing, rushing toward the suddenly obliterated door, and the Rangers standing behind it.
51. Hayden.
No!
Hayden shouted, rushing down the aisle toward the center of the room. Hicks and the other Rangers opened fire on the Reapers, 4 rifles pounding 3 Relia with slugs. Under different circumstances, it might have been enough. But the Reapers weren't ordinary trife. They were spliced with human DNA, making them stronger, faster, smarter, and able to take way more punishment. He made it to the edge of the wine barrels in time to see the Reapers collide with the Rangers. Bach was down in an instant, tackled by one of the creatures, its claws punching clear through the hardened transparency of his visor and into his head. Jackson managed to get out of the way, still shooting at the Reaper attacking her and bringing it down. Hicks stood his ground, one of the Reapers digging its claws into his arm as he fired a 2nd explosive into its chest. Grunting in pain, Hicks kicked its leg and shoved it aside. The explosive detonated a moment later, sending pieces of Reaper splattering across the room. 1 down, 3 to go. Hayden raced to the stairs. His HUD showed the Koron-infected guards were also recovering from their wounds and coming up from behind, ready to rejoin the fight. The Reaper on Bach finished its work, preparing to lunge at Ivanov, while Jackson's target scrambled back to its feet. Albert was coming around the corner near the back of the room, joined there by Bryant. Hicks fell to a knee, blood pouring from the deep wound in his arm. Hayden's jaw clenched. He had told them to retreat, damn it. He closed his eyes, but only for an instant, just long enough to refocus. He had 4 rounds in 1 revolver, 2 in the other. He had a pair of augmented arms, one of which had Axon nanocells layered over it. He had been down before. As long as he was breathing, he wasn't out. But how the hell was he going to get his people out of this? How the hell was he going to get himself out? 6 bullets, 2 Reapers in front, 1 somewhere to his left, 2 Koron-infected behind him, their exact position fed into the combat network by Hicks's line of sight. He opened his eyes. Turning sideways, he pointed the revolver with 4 shots toward the Reapers in front of him. The revolver with 2 shots he aimed at the Koron-infected behind him. Making all 6 shots virtually simultaneously would be impossible without the augmented fighting capabilities of the ATCS in his sunglasses, which is why Natalia had made them. He, a crack shot before he had received the gift. He was even better after. He squeezed the triggers on both guns, hands twitching in response to his inputs based on the view of the targets. 4 rounds went for the eyes of the Reapers near his Rangers. 2 went for the 2 Koron-infected, aimed at the space between the collarbone and neck, a 6-centimeter gap in bone that led to the Koron's normal position in its host body. It all happened in a split second. The 2 rounds hit their marks, and Albert collapsed. But Bryant was wearing a bodysuit, and the bullet couldn't punch through. But it still distracted him. The 4 other rounds hit the Reapers, but not where he had hoped. They got their hands up in time, blocking their faces from his attack as if they had seen it coming. Because they had. He used the same attack against the other pair less than a minute earlier, and the information had already passed through their subliminal network, letting them react ahead of him. 6 rounds, 4 targets. Only 1 of them fell. It wasn't even close to enough. 1 Reaper leaped at Ivanov, and she screamed as it tackled her, raising its claws to strike. The other grabbed Jackson's leg, claws digging into it and yanking her to the ground. The 3rd emerged from the barrels next to Hayden, coming his way, while Bryant pulled a gun of his own, a big, arrogant, overly satisfied smile on his face. Hayden's heart pounded as the revolvers fell from his hands, dropping toward the floor. He couldn't stop the Reapers. He couldn't save the Rangers. They were going to die. He was going to die. He had done his best, and he had failed. He rushed toward the Reaper on Ivanov. He wasn't sure he would make it in time, or if the Reaper on his left would grab him before he could get that far. Bryant could shoot him in the back of the head. He only saw the Ranger in trouble,
and that he was the only one who could help. Or so he thought. A strange sensation washed over him, a tingling that caused the hairs on his neck to stand up. At the same time, the Reapers suddenly froze, stopping mid-attack. Something hit the building, a wave of heat and energy flowing overhead and into the ceiling, causing a detonation of masonry and wood that sent debris exploding outward. The force of the sudden attack threw Hayden into the steps beneath Hicks, who was tossed back and into Jackson and the Reaper. Bryant was hit just as hard, thrown back into the wall like a rag doll. Dozens of wine barrels splintered and shattered, spilling their contents on the floor. Hayden groaned and rolled over. A cloud of dust rose into the open hole created by the attack. A large humanoid shape dropped through the center of the cloud. He stared at it in disbelief, heart racing, a small smile turning up the edges of his mouth. Nathan Stacker hefted his rifle, taking two steps to the nearest Reaper, pressing the muzzle against its head and squeezing off multiple rounds. Blood, bone, and brain matter sprayed against the floor. Nathan turned and stomped toward Bryant, who started shooting, his bullets pinging uselessly off the Centurion's powered armor. Nathan grabbed the Koron-infected man's head, ready to break his neck.
"Nathan, wait!" Hayden shouted. "I need him alive!"
Nathan froze, shifting his powerful grip and breaking Bryant's legs instead. Hayden pushed himself up, grabbing Bok's rifle. The Reapers were still frozen in place as if they were in a trance. He put the end of the weapon to each of their skulls, firing enough rounds to ensure they wouldn't get back up. It was over in seconds. 52. Hayden. Hayden didn't waste time on greetings, not right away. He had wounded Rangers who needed attention. He turned away from Nathan and toward Hicks, digging into the Chief Ranger's thigh pocket for a patch before removing his helmet and helping him open the combat armor.
"Ivanov," he said as she shoved the dead Reaper off her and rose to her feet. "Help Jackson."
"Roger, Sheriff," she replied, moving to where Jackson was laying on the floor trying to tend to her own leg wound.
"Hayden," Nathan said, coming up behind him. "I appreciate you showing up when you did, Nate," Hayden replied without looking. "More than I can express in words. Give me a minute to patch up my Ranger."
He tore the sleeve from Hicks's undershirt, revealing the deep gash beneath.
"Hurts, doesn't it?"
"Shut up," Hicks replied, smiling. He looked at Nathan.
"Thanks for the save, General."
"Anytime," Nathan said. Hayden tore open the patch and placed it against the left side of the wound. It clung to the flesh on its own, and he pulled at it, dragging it across the wound edges so the skin was joined together again. Then he brought the patch down and put light pressure on the center to seal it.
"You'll wind up with a scar, but otherwise you'll be fine," Hayden said. "Only 50 more and I'll be caught up to you,"
Hicks said, half grinning.
"Hayden," Nathan said again.
"Do me a favor," Hayden replied.
"Check on Bryant. He might be getting up again by now."
"He won't get up again. Caleb's got him under control."
Hayden froze at the name. His head turned slowly back toward Nathan.
"Did you just say Caleb?"
"Pause," Nathan replied.
"Sergeant Caleb Card?"
"Pause."
Hayden's heart started racing.
Caleb Card was here?
Shit. You should have opened with that. The whole reason I'm here instead of Sanisco is because I was trying to get a new ick for Nat. She wanted to find him.
I already found him, Nathan said. Or rather, he found me.
What the hell is going on out there?
I was hoping you could tell me.
Hayden.
Nathan paused. His faceplate slid up, revealing the tired human eye and a weary, sweaty face.
Eden Rise is gone.
Hayden felt like he was punched in the gut a second time. Even Hicks reacted to the news.
What?
The Chief Ranger whispered.
Gone. Destroyed.
What about the shield? Hayden asked breathlessly.
It couldn't hold. There were just too many.
Trife?
It started with Trife. It finished with
tentacle monsters. Hayden interrupted.
Nathan nodded. You've seen them.
Pause.
We killed a big one, and then we found a room full of their egg sacs. Probably 100 of them, or more. We lost good people doing it.
I lost thousands, Aiden. In less than an hour. Caleb's the only reason any of us survived.
Who is he?
He's got some story to tell, but I'll let him tell it. The good news is he seems to be on our side. I'll take all the good news I can get. I don't have much more of it to share. We're in a bad spot, Aiden, and I'm not sure we can get out of it.
We have to try.
Aiden turned back to the Rangers. Jackson was patched and on her feet, Ivanov helping to support her. Hicks was holding his patched arm against his chest, looking down at Bach.
His wife just had a baby, Hicks said.
Aiden clenched his teeth, hit a third time. He knelt beside the Ranger, removing the destroyed helmet. Bach's face was unrecognizable.
Hicks, your bucket.
Hicks passed it over and Aiden lifted Bach's head, sliding the helmet down and clicking it in place. Then he slid his hands beneath the body, lifting it up.
I take it you have a ship, Aiden said.
It's parked outside near your chopper, Nathan replied.
Aiden looked past Nathan as Bryant got back to his feet and started walking toward them. Aiden grabbed his revolver, raising it toward the Koron-infected man.
Wait, Nathan said. He's not a threat.
Aiden saw it now. Bryant had an empty look on his face, his body shuffling like a zombie.
Cart? He asked. Sort of.
Aiden didn't ask him to elaborate. It was better to let Sergeant Card explain for himself. He turned and started up the steps carrying Bach. The building was in ruins around them, small fires threatening to turn into much larger ones at any moment. He kicked the remains of the cellar doors out of the way, moving through the room with the stage. Bodies littered the floor, including the thugs the Rangers had downed. The cages had broken free of the beams suspending them, falling sideways to the floor. The dancers were still locked in, trapped and terrified.
Help us, one of them shouted.
Hold on, Aiden said to them. We'll get you out.
Nathan went over to the first cage, grabbing the top in his powerful hands and tearing it away. The women climbed out as he did the same to the other one.
Hurry, Aiden said, directing them toward the exit.
The smoke was getting thicker, the fires beginning to spread.
This way, Ivanov said, trying to guide them out. Hurry!
The women ran out ahead of them. Aiden trailed Jackson and Hicks, with Nathan at the rear. They passed through the second room and out into the open, rushing to the field behind the building. The flames expanded rapidly, licking out the windows and enveloping the inside of the winery within minutes. A group of nearly a dozen women were already in the field, huddled together a short distance from the Centurion dropship, which was blocking Hayden's view of the Iroquois. They were dingy and ragged and bruised. A few were bleeding from open cuts, but they were alive.
Rosa Colombo, Aiden said, approaching them with Bach still cradled in his arms. Do any of you know Rosa Colombo?
The women were silent for a few seconds. Then one of them emerged from the group. A petite, olive-skinned woman in a short nightgown.
I'm Rosa Colombo.
I'm Sheriff Aiden Duke of the United Western Territories.
He could almost feel the entire group of women relax slightly at the mention of his name.
Your husband Josiah told me about this place, and that you were taken. I came here looking for you.
Rosa shook her head.
No, senor. I'm sorry, but that's not possible. Josias is dead.
Aiden glanced at Hicks before looking back at Rosa.
No, Hicks said. He said his name was Josias Colombo, about this tall, brown hair, brown eyes, similar complexion to you. He described you perfectly.
Rosa continued shaking her head.
That sounds like Josias, but I'm very sorry that cannot be. 3 days ago, a man came to our farm. He murdered my husband and took me. He didn't say why, but he brought me to these animals. They told me if I didn't do what they said, they would torture me. I saw other girls who tried to resist.
Tears welled in her eyes.
Josias is dead. I watched the man cut his throat. I watched him bleed to death in the grass.
Aiden stared at her.
If Josias was dead, who was the person in Sanisco claiming to be Josias? And who also looked just like Josias?
Axon, Nathan said.
A chill ran down Hayden's spine. If Nathan was right, everything had just become much more complicated. Why would an Axon lead him into a Relia trap? Were the Axon and Relia working together now? That didn't seem possible. Nathan, how did you know where to find me?
We did a flyby of Sanisco before we came up this way, Nathan replied. Your people told me where you were. I think your city is fine, Hayden. For now, anyway.
For now? Jackson asked.
If there's an Axon in Sanisco, then nothing's fine, Hayden said. It got me out of there for a reason. I think you should talk to Caleb, Nathan replied. On the way back to Sanisco.
Pause, Hayden agreed. How many can you take in the ship?
We've got space for all of them, but I think they're better off here.
You expect the creatures that attacked Edenrise to attack Sanisco?
I think it's inevitable. My guess is the only reason they haven't is because you found their nest before they all hatched.
We need to warn them, Hicks said. We need to get them ready to fight.
Hayden activated his comm.
Bronson.
Yes, Sheriff, the pilot replied.
Try to get HQ on the line.
Roger, stand by.
You aren't going to leave us out here, are you, Sheriff?
One of the women asked.
We don't even have any clothes. We're not safe out here,
another one said.
You aren't safe with us either, Hayden replied.
They can come back to my farm, Rosa said. I have shelter there. Can you give us a gun at least?
The first woman said.
I'll do one better, Hayden replied. Jackson, how's your ankle?
What's wrong with my ankle?
Jackson replied with a smirk.
I want you and Ivanov to stay with the group. Bring them back to Rose's farm, make sure everything's clear, and then call Bronson for pickup.
Roger, Sheriff,
Jackson and Ivanov said.
Sheriff, Bronson said, the connection's choppy here. I'm getting a link, which means the antenna's up.